I don't know if I qualify as an expert. Certainly don't think of myself as an expert, more of a student of a lot of things. But I guess to explain why I'm here, I'm certainly not a scientist, not a marine biologist, although I do tend to frolic amongst them. One of the things that is a privilege to have grown up with is a unique background. I've been diving since the age of 4 years old. And bear with me while I have my first sip of coffee. And throughout that time, I don't recommend it to your kids, by the way. Being thrown overboard is certainly a startling decision, but it was a wonderland since then. And part of those experiences was being able to go on expedition and see sharks of varying types every single dive. Now, that has always fascinated me, and I think it's fascinated hundreds of millions of people around the world, whether out of fear or out of fascination. These animals, which there are over 400 species of, are pretty amazing creatures on so many levels. Let's see if I don't have to reach over. Whoops. Let's go back. There we go. One of the things that I grew up with that you may not be as familiar with is a cartoon or book called Tintin. And my favorite one, of course, not surprisingly, was Le Trésor de Rackham le Rouge, or Red Rackham's Treasure, in which Tintin and his dog Milou, or I think Snowy in English, went and looked for treasure amongst other sharks as a shark-shaped submersible. Well, I thought that was a fascinating idea. The idea sat in the back of the attic of my brain for a long time. And throughout the years, we've all seen a huge difference, a huge change in these garbage men and women of the oceans, the cleaners of the oceans, if you will, which they think of sharks as being kind of that regular, that flag bearer of the health of the oceans. I had the privilege of working with National Geographic, maybe I think it was 2002, and it was called Attacks of the Mystery Shark, and it was about Mattawan, New Jersey, 1916, which was, from all recollection, some of the basis for the most famous shark show, shark movie in the world, for better or for worse, Jaws. When I was a little kid, I knew nothing about Jaws. I certainly didn't think of sharks as Jaws. I thought of them as these interesting fish that had their role in life, and I was fascinated. Most people think of Jaws as this. One species, the great white, and man-eaters. And of course, in great part, our fantasies and the media have a lot to do with that picture. Well, I'm all for fantasy. I have nothing against it, and I really liked Peter Benchley when he was with us. And he became one of the biggest shark conservationists around. But that stigma had lingered, and still does to this day, surprisingly so, even with our better knowledge. And I wanted to do something about it, beyond what we normally do. I wanted to tell a story about sharks in a very different way, not for the PBS audience, which we have a series for, not for the National Geographic Discovery audience, which are an audience that tunes in to Shark Week and other programs for admittedly a lot of the same old stuff, mostly the gaping mouth and all the sensationalism, despite the fact that they're talking about Shark Week as a conservation week for sharks. But to approach the subject in a very different manner that can rope in those people who don't tune in specifically for sharks, who read the paper, who think that there are sharks attacks every day around the world, and that they're all man-eaters. As you may know, most of them aren't even the size of our arm. A lot of them are vegetarian out of those 400 species. Only 20%, if that, of those 400 species are even the size of a person or bigger. Personally, I think land sharks are much more dangerous. And we can talk about shark finning and everything else. I know we have very little time.
Well, no, and I think this is a good jumping off point, because the thread of the conversation where you're going, again, goes to this whole issue of how we sort of stereotype where we are. It's, they're not warm and cuddly necessarily. We've built up this thought process about how over the years or decades we looked at sharks as these man-eating predators, or we see a lot of the hype. I want to jump around a little, because I think in a way, Luke, actually, you're sort of at the tail end, no pun intended, efforts creation here with the shark-free marinas. I think jumping off what you said, and I want to get to more of the work you're doing, but Matt, I think it's kind of important to frame the issue about how we've looked at sharks, but how some of the experts like Matt are looking at what we're doing to that shark population. You got some stunning photos here that we saw at the outset. So Matt, kind of frame a little bit off what Fabian's saying, the issue, so that we can round back to Fabian about what, some of the things he's doing to try and educate us here.
So just to set some context, up to 73 million sharks are killed annually, primarily for their fins. That is a study that was done in 2006 by Shelley Clark in the Hong Kong fin trade. So the numbers are between 30 and up to 73 million are killed, although if you talk with a number of scientists, they do believe that it's probably significantly higher than that, because the bycatch that's discarded at sea is not counted. That has not been put in any peer-reviewed journal at this point. 30% of the species are now threatened or near threatened with extinction, and we are data deficient, meaning we don't have a scientific assessment for about another 50% of the species of sharks. So basically, most of the sharks are in pretty bad shape, and in fact, I really can't point to many populations of sharks, maybe just a very few that we could actually say are in healthy condition. I'm going to just make a couple quick points, and then I'm happy to talk about the work in a later discussion. But I wanted to point out, pull up these photos here. Thanks, Mahmood. That we are quickly wiping out the world sharks, and this is happening in a very short time frame. Sorry, let me see if I can do this in with the other program that was open here. Sorry. Well, we'll just do this. These are salmon sharks. These sharks are some of the most biologically susceptible sharks to swim in the ocean. This is Kesanuma, Japan. They are very slow to reach sexual maturity. These sharks, I don't believe, reach sexual maturity until they're about the 18 years in age, at which time they have a handful of pups, between 2 and 6 pups. We showed these photos to a number of different scientists, and they believe that it will be a very short fishery before these are wiped out completely. Their cousin, the poor beagle shark in the Atlantic, is already virtually gone. So these are more salmon sharks, are about 1,500 in one day, landed at this port in Kesanuma, Japan. These are longliners in Taiwan. Longliners are the most lethal fishing gear for sharks globally. And then I'm just going to kind of quickly run through these photos. I'm sorry, they should have come up full screen. But these are just recently taken in Taiwan. Thousands of shark fins drying in the sun. Just to give you some scale to this, up to 73 million sharks killed annually. Because you hear about it, but actually I don't think people can really visualize what...
Matt, these are all your photos?
Yeah, these are our photos. We released them earlier this week. Taiwan has come back and since said that they have a fins naturally attached policy, which is one of the points that I'm going to make, that's very nice, but it doesn't actually save any sharks.
Amplifying that, because I think that it kind of amplifies what you're talking about. Amplifying that point right now.
Sure. So finning is not the answer. Everybody focuses on shark finning as the problem. That is not the problem. The problem is that we are catching and taking too many sharks out of the world's oceans. By and large, finning is now illegal in the world's oceans. The international fishery management bodies that regulate the high seas, and most countries at this point, have made quote-unquote finning illegal. Finning is the practice of cutting a shark fin off at sea, sometimes while the shark is still alive, and throwing the carcass overboard, only retaining the fins. Most international law at this point mandates a 5% fin-to-carcass ratio, which means you have to have 5% of the full weight of the shark has to be in its fin. So you're not allowed to do finning anymore in most of the world's oceans. So a lot of the focus from the media is on shark finning because it's that horrific situation about really throwing the bodies overboard. That's not the global issue anymore. The bodies still come in, but the problem is we're catching and killing too many sharks. Sharks are very different than regular fish. So I point out a skipjack tuna in the Pacific Ocean reaches sexual maturity at age 2, at which time it can have 2 million eggs every other day. A shark, like these salmon sharks, don't reach sexual maturity until they're 18 years, at which time they're having 2 to 6 pups over an 18-month gestation period. So they just don't have the same biological capacity as the fish that we're removing from the ocean for other commercial purposes. That's why we're losing sharks. It's not... So it is about their fins, though. By and large, most sharks are caught for their fins. They're not caught for their flesh. Most of the species of sharks, the flesh is worth about $1 a pound, where fins can go for about $100 a pound. And actually, when you start to get to the market, up to $700 or $900 a pound. So they are being killed for their fins.
And it begs the question, of course, and Mahmoud, I want to bring you in here, because we talked about this on the phone, and any of the panelists, please jump in here. But Mahmoud, we talked about, as we jump to this critical question about, okay, this is where we're at. How do we now move forward in terms of the preservation of this resource? And I know you had some pushback on some of this debate and controversy, and I want you to jump in and then the rest of the panelists as well. Because you and I talked about this on the phone, playing off what Matt's just said as he frames this issue, about how we move forward with this preservation effort.
Right. You know, it's... Sorry, can you hear me all right? I get the impression that most of the media, most of you are probably well familiar with the issues facing sharks. There's no argument that sharks are being overexploited dramatically. I don't think this is new to you folks, right? I would imagine. The next issue really is what can be done about it and what is being done about it, and that's the sticky point. Because the politics involved are you know, they're very tricky. And one of the issues that I think really needs to be addressed is the fact that a very large proportion of sharks that are being fished on the high seas. So international management is key, but international management is very difficult to do because you've got to get countries to talk to each other, and the politics there are just enormously tricky. Hopefully that's a discussion that we can have in terms of brainstorming a little bit about that. I had a quick presentation to show you. It's about the long-term track of a tiger shark, just to illustrate the fact that these animals move enormous distances and go into the jurisdictional waters of multiple countries. I'm not sure I can quite set it up just now, but maybe we can get to that a bit later.
Your point was to me that you said that when we talked, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, you said, you know, I'm going to get a little pushback here because I think as we talk about preservation, it unfortunately can never be a zero-sum game. We're going to have to recognize the preservation effort means how do we manage the resource. We're never going to get to a point where we're not pulling it out of the ocean, unfortunately. Talk about that.
Well, my take's a little different in the sense that I think that the media tends to focus on dramatic sort of issues. When a single shark is killed by a recreational fisherman and the fisherman hangs it up on the deck on the dock, you know, it gets a lot of coverage and a lot of, in fact, there's quite a lot of hyperbole that accompanies this. And I personally think it's sort of a wasted allocation of time by the media, because that's not where the real problem is. The problem is not the occasional recreational catch. The problem is industrial fishing on the high seas, and people, scientists, conservationists, government, there are limited resources and limited time available to address these issues. And that time and the resources should be focused on where the big problem is, which is big commercial fisheries on the high seas.
Go, Matt, now jump in.
Luke,
I want to amend it. Luke's up. Luke's kind of going back. I see you shaking your head, Matt, so jump in.
No, I completely agree with Mahmoud. I wanted to point out that the United States is no great white and shining, what's the expression, knight in shining armor on this. In fact, the United States catches more sharks than Japan catches. So these sharks that I showed you earlier, the United States is number 8 in the world for catching sharks. We're on the international level, the United States was not helpful at what these international bodies, the one in the Atlantic is called ICAT, the International Convention for the Conservation of Atlantic Tunas, and that is a problem because it's tunas and they don't want to manage sharks. But the United States didn't help get protections for sharks this past year. They were very weak.
And Matt, let me jump in with a question regarding emails that goes directly to this point. And I've gotten a bunch of emails about things that we should ask. And some of the people at the shark fishery are saying, quote, and I don't have a name for this, it's your opportunity to speak up for the U.S. shark fishery, which is being lumped in with the illegal, unreported, and unregulated IUU shark fisheries around the world. Quote, unquote, the U.S. leads the world in shark species protection. I only jump in because it's a topic.
Yeah, I was on those emails. There's one particular shark fisherman who loves to email everybody. Yeah, we have 18 species of sharks or 19 species of sharks now that are prohibited from being caught on the United States East Coast. The United States government has not added a single shark species to that prohibited list since 1999. Rusty asked if Pew would be there if Pew would be there, and I was going to reply, you can count on us being there, Rusty. I don't think he would have been as happy about how we would view it. But, you know, we have some species of sharks on the East Coast that are so depleted that they won't recover for 100 years. Or up to 100 years. So they're basically gone. So the United States has restricted its shark fishery. Unfortunately, it hasn't done enough quickly enough, and therefore we have lost most of our large coastal sharks.
I want to, as you all talk about this, and Mahmoud, I know you want to look at some of the things, as we start moving to where we go policy-wise, because as you said, rightly, we know what the issue is, largely, but how do we start moving forward, and especially here at SCJ, how do we say, okay, we take the headlines we're hearing about, but what are we doing policy-wise that 2 years from now we're not having the same conversation we're having today, and 5 years from now, and six, and sort of regurgitating the same conversation. So as we start looking at policy and having you interact, and we'll get to your questions in a minute. Luke, you're part of that effort, and I then want to kind of round it back to Fabian, as you've been listening in, about how we educate. Part of what you're doing, Luke, is that with shark-free marinas, and then round it back to Fabian, because that's a lot of what you're doing as well, the education part of this. And we're going to start having some interaction here and jump into your questions. Luke?
Sure. I'll be fairly brief about this. My name is Luke Tipple, background in marine biology, started out in research science, moved on to film and television and tourism. Shark-free marinas was an idea born from that. Basically, it was a complete moment of frustration when one of the animals, the tiger sharks that we regularly worked with, was killed for sport. And that animal, which could earn in excess of hundreds of thousands of dollars for the local economy, and we've proved that, this is in Bahamas, was killed and slaughtered for the, you know, basically for fun. So shark-free marinas was born out of the idea that if the fisherman wasn't allowed and he knew that he wasn't allowed to bring that fish back to the dock, at least perhaps he would have taken that person out, got his recreational dollars and released the shark. It's not a perfect world scenario, but it's the best we could get in that circumstance. Being that, kind of like Mahmoud said, I'm not necessarily a, you know, an animal rights guy who's saying we need to protect all sharks. I just want the species and the resource managed better, which means sustainable use of all of the species. But as Matt said, you know, right now that's really not a likely scenario for quite a while. So very briefly, because I know media is such a huge important part of what we do, it's really simple. We go to marinas and docks and we ask them to put this sign on their marina. Shark-free marina, no sharks allowed. For the municipal marinas who are not allowed to do this because of state or federally mandated laws that don't allow them to prohibit other than what the state or federal government has said, we have a second category, which you can see there, which is a shark-friendly marina.
How many marinas have you got to?
We actually just finished up with we're still running a Florida campaign, which has netted about 130 marinas.
130 Florida marinas are now in here.
We have about 130 in total, about 85 to 90% of them are in Florida.
We're bringing in how many sharks before they...
Well, that's the interesting thing, and it brings up an interesting point about data collection, which is very, very tough. We've decided, Shark Free Marinas is now an initiative of the Humane Society of the United States. We've decided that we're comfortable with pulling a number from NOAA's database of in excess of 100,000 sharks recreationally taken on the east coast of the United States. That's including the Gulf. But if we query the database in a in a more liberal sense, then we can come up with much higher numbers. So that's kind of our company directive, and our scientists have said, you know, we're comfortable with saying in excess of 100,000. But it's important to remember that while internationally the longline fishing and everything that these gentlemen are mentioning is the critical issue, we're also facing an issue of people's ignorance to the actual problem and also the media bias and slant towards sharks not being a real problem. So we've got local fishermen here who still think it's quite okay to go out and kill a breeding age tiger shark or a breeding age hammerhead and take that animal from the population and remove its ability to contribute back to the population. That's totally okay because they're recreational. The problem is the commercial guys, right? The fishing guys, the finners and the Asians. Screw that. The problem is everybody. Right? The problem is in every coastline, it's on every TV channel, it's every time the media decides to put, glorify some local fisherman for being some massive hunter, or we've got MSNBC going down and doing news reports completely wrong about bull sharks being in the wrong water at the wrong time, and then they show us pictures of lemon sharks, a threatened species, so the next fisherman that goes out and catches the lemon shark, oh, that's the same species that almost killed that boy in Georgia or something, you know. It's completely wrong in the way that the media decides to present different species of sharks and the actual problem at hand.
And Luke, I see Fabian shaking his head. And Fabian, as we come back to the work you're doing and sort of kind of trying to frame the issues and educate, which is what you're jumping off at. And then I want to, from there, have you all talk for a few minutes among yourselves, because I know people like Matt and all of you go to these conferences all over the globe, and I would think it's fair to say beat your heads against the wall because you feel like you're in an echo chamber sometimes, having the same conversation with the same officials, with the same people every year. And for SCJ, we want to kind of jump to where you start connecting the threads of seeing where we go forward in terms of policy and what positives we see, if in fact you do. But I saw you vigorously shaking your head, baby, and kind of frame the issue as to how you're trying to help educate and frame that.
It's very simple. I mean, there's a lot of data out there now, and we always stand to have more data. And that's wonderful, especially in meetings such as this, closed-door meetings at the UN, down at Capitol Hill, et cetera, to get some of those policies done. But the general public is still on square one, whether it be in the United States or elsewhere. We're at the very beginning of the conversation with them. As you just pointed out, most people think that it's okay to go and fish sharks, because there are plenty of them. Until we get over that mindset, it's not about protecting a couple of species sharks. It's about doing a global ban on all sharks. Because until we get to a point where the general public...
You say global ban on all sharks?
On all sharks... Because if you start targeting certain species of sharks, the problem becomes that the general public will be even more confused than they're confused now. I'm shocked that here, for example, in Miami, which you would think the general public would be fairly educated on the number of shark species that are here, natively speaking, ones are in danger. Bull sharks, nurse, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a whole list. Actually, Matt would know better than I. Or any of the panelists. The problem is you walk down half a block down this street to the marina, to where all the restaurants are, and you still see a diorama of a great white shark strung up as a fishing trophy. Of course, it's 20 feet long or something like that. With those icons in our background of our everyday, we have no chance of changing the public's perception until we take that shark down.
I think what it's saying, to just emphasize that point, there is a knock-on effect here. I'm well aware that shark-free marinas and people going out and doing little educational talks and stuff like that, the impact we actually might have on saving a certain number of sharks is minuscule compared to the global problem. But when talking about a global problem, we need to be part of the global solution. As a first world and supposedly forward-thinking country, I come from one, I hope you all come from one as well. We can be a better part of this global solution by promoting better use and sustainable resource use in the key areas that we see, which are, Asian demand for...
I mean, people still think...
...or product of shark products.
People still think that sharks are disposable. you know, and they of course point out to the attacks and everything that are. This is not a bash on the media. Actually, the media is probably our best asset. But you know, that there are shark attacks around the world, and they shouldn't be in the waters because we need to enjoy those waters and so on and so forth. I mean, there's what, one shark attack per 1 million sharks killed, and of which most of them are not fatal.
Well, let me ask you: as we sit here, and if I'm sitting out in the audience with my colleagues, with my pen in hand or my camera recording, and I'm jumping to, and by the way, SCJ active numbers, raise your hands, because by policy you'll get the first round of questions. We're going to jump to. What are we missing so far in this conversation in terms of where we're going, Matt, Mahmood? Because it reminds me that again, a lot of us know that there's a problem out there. As you sit here today, and you're putting yourself out there. Where's the headline we're missing or that we need to be writing and then digging in deeper on in terms of where we're going, in terms of positive measures, in terms of global efforts, national efforts? What are we missing here? I'll put a thread or two together here, and then let's jump into some of the questions from our SCJ members. Mahmood, and then Matt, and then the rest of them.
I think that the goal of, with all due respect, Fabian, the goal of banning shark fishing globally is impractical politically, and it can't be done. And I come from the school that also thinks that sharks can be used as a resource, but it has to be done extremely carefully because of their life history characteristics. So I think probably the best way to approach this is to reduce the number of sharks that are being killed substantially and manage them so that they can be exploited at a sustainable level without affecting their populations long term.
Are we anywhere near treaties that are even close to allowing us to
we're
do
not. No, we're not.
Not even close. No, I mean, I agree with Mahmood. There's two sides to the equation, the supply side and the demand side. We haven't actually discussed the demand side. The demand is primarily for shark fin soup in Asia. It's not just China, but in Asia, where a bowl of shark fin soup can go for $100. And you have the middle class in China growing in the next 30 years or so by the population of the United States. These are the people that will have the ability to eat a $100 bowl of shark fin soup. So that's kind of where we are. So there's two sides to the equation. We're trying to figure out how to take on the demand side. I don't think anybody at this point has been able to effectively reduce demand. We are also focused on the supply side. So those are the two kind of ways that we can actually solve this equation.
What headline that needs to be dug into more deeply are we missing if we walk out of this room and aren't reporting on quickly? And then I'm going to open it up to questions. And I know you said, well, gee, that's kind of superficial, but you got some folks here who know how to dig beneath that and have their expertise. So as they walk out of here, what would you say? Damn, I let them walk out of here without framing this issue. And I must say, before we're done, there's got to be, I would presume, some positive that you say we're at least moving forward here. But whatever it may be, when they walk out of here in about 40 minutes, what will you say? Damn, that's the headline. That's the story that we need to be digging into, that I need to tell them about, that they need to be writing about, framing, and asking about quickly from each of you. And then we're going to have SCJ members start with your questions. Matt?
I'd say two things. One is I think we need to be more critical, unfortunately, of the administration. The administration has not done enough for global shark conservation and domestic shark conservation. I'm happy to go further into that. The other thing that I would like to point to is the growing momentum for shark sanctuaries. There are now 6 shark sanctuaries that equal about the size of 8 times the state of California. So about 4 million square kilometers that are now off limits to shark fishing completely. And then I think that's the positive thing.
Mahmood, 8:45, 9 o'clock, they walk out. What would you be chasing after and saying, you know, this is what we need to be talking about, we didn't touch on?
Right. I'd like to interject two things. One is just to reiterate what Matt said, was that there is some good news in the sense that there are all these, there's a huge movement to establish shark sanctuaries, and mass organization has been spearheading this and have done a tremendous job. That's a really amazing thing. The amount of territory that's protecting sharks now is just phenomenal. The other point I'd like to make is that I think we have to, as the media and the scientists, especially scientists, have to be very careful about the hyperbole that's associated with sharks. You know, sharks are sort of you know, the issue du jour now in the marine world. And I think that there's a lot of misinformation that's being promulgated out there. A lot of it is coming out from, you know, scientists who like media attention, and also some NGOs that are being very uncritical in the kinds of information they put out there. And then the media is uncritical about what they report.
Uncritical in terms of hyping the level of the problem? We're not talking enough about the severity?
No, in terms of presenting misinformation, presenting a skewed version of the scientific information that's out there.
I'll give you an example.
This work, you know, you hear this figure about, in fact, it's in the description here, that 70 million sharks are killed a year, primarily for shark fin soup. First of all, that number, 70 million, came from studies we did with Shelley Clark, and actually it wasn't even 70 million. It was a median of 38 million, but bracketed to, because there are, you know, assumptions in the models, that would range from 28 to 73 million. And you rarely, and Shelley has been trying to point this out in many places, you rarely see that number, the best estimate, 38 million used. You rarely see as low as 26 million and as high as 73 million. Now, 26 million is not a low number. It's an enormously large number, but there is a tendency to just slant it in the media by NGOs.
And your argument is we're not helping understanding what we need to do in terms of preservation.
No, right. My argument is that I think that using those sorts of numbers ultimately discredits what is really good advocacy, because the people on the opposite side come back and say, but you're not representing the data correctly, therefore how do we know that anything you're saying is correct? And the media, I think, should be a little more critical in the kinds of numbers they report.
So that when you're framing the issues, I sort of saw you shaking your head, Matt, that you agree that we've got to frame the issue properly. And don't say, Luke, quickly, I want to have members, and I'm just going to go down the road very quickly.
Sure. I completely concur with everything I said. Everything is absolutely right. I hope you take it on board. If you're leaving today, and I had one thing to encourage all of you as journalists to do, it's to report the right stories. So many times I'm bombarded with, you know, media interest or, you know, people telling me about media stories that have come out, and it's about silly stuff, you know, people catching sharks or a guy got bit and suddenly it's turned into this great big media fiasco. I'd rather see the attention paid to work like the shark sanctuaries that's getting done, fishing violations. I constantly am approached by media asking me about certain stories, you know, a whale shark got killed here or netted there, or an illegal white shark was taken on these coastlines, but I never really see them in mainstream media. It's little eco-blogs and things like that, which are all great, they do their part, but I'd like to see much more attention paid to actual violations and the things which is messing the population up, which really needs to be on your radar, rather than the, you know, if it bleeds, it leads shark story about some guy got bit on the leg, big deal.
What's the sense of, are these kind of estimates of the number of sharks reintroduced into the ecosystem each year and kind of a worldwide shark population estimate?
We don't know such number.
It's hard to say.
We know, again, up to 30% of the species are threatened or near threatened with extinction, and not enough information for another 50% of the species. So the sharks are in serious jeopardy of many of them being removed from our oceans forever, in a very short time frame.
And collapsing the systems underneath them when that happens.
You certainly have a huge impact throughout the whole marine ecosystem when you take the top predator out that has roamed the oceans for 400 million years, and the oceans have evolved with that top predator. And so if you remove that top predator, you throw everything askew.
Maybe one thing, if people walking out here in 35, 40 minutes, that you say, man, we missed it because we're not touching on this, focusing on it.
Certainly.
And I'll have you all stand up, and I'm going to go down the line and let you throw it out and start having a discussion. Go ahead.
No, all we have to do is open our eyes. Just in my lifetime, they're in the same places that I used to go dive, I used to see sharks everywhere. There are no sharks left. It's very, very simple. I mean, it's anecdotal in that case. It's not scientific, but it's obvious. When I say we have to protect all sharks worldwide, I know that is not a feasible thing, but it's a message that we have to send out regardless. Because if we do that, then we'll be able to fathom that we may be able to protect 30, 40, 50% of those populations worldwide. One small anecdotal example that I just had in the Maldives, in a place that I've been to several times in the last few years, where they have just started protecting sharks. I didn't see any sharks in the Maldives. I heard all about these wonderful dives with sharks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And unfortunately, there are very few. This year, for the first time at the Waterman Symposium, I sat there on the beach thinking about the summary of what we had accomplished at that symposium. And I looked on the shoreline in a place that didn't have any sharks, and I saw a number of baby black tips coming by and feeding on the shoals near shore, which gave me great hope. Now, granted, this is a very microcosmic example and a small step in the right direction. But until we send that broadband message around the world that we need those sharks for our own very survival, our own very health, because the health of the oceans is the health of people, we can't stand to imagine anything else. So unless we can all become scientists and understand the intricacies of each one of those 400 species plus of sharks, we need to be able to address at least the general public in broad strokes and in much more enlightened strokes, not just the gaping mouth and all that sensational stuff, but some of the more intricate stories that are really fascinating about that particular type of animal, those species, and why we should care beyond the sport fishing and the commercial fishing. Yao Ming, for example, has been used to go throughout China and talking about shark finning and shark fin soup being not acceptable anymore. And those things are starting to make progress.
All right. We've got some of the most engaged environmental journalists in our audience. They must be, because they're here at 7:30 in the morning and nursing a couple of topics. So now it's your turn, pen to paper, to say these are the issues that I want you to help me bring. SCJ active members, which is policy here. Who are our SCJ active members? Please, all of you, raise your hands. All right, we're going to go. I'm just going to start here. We're going to go this way and that. So if I miss anybody, and I'm just going to start with the top. The other policy is complaint number two every year, questions turn into speeches. I'm not going to let it happen. I have a nice, tight question from each of you to let the panel go at. And you have to please give your name and your title.
I'm Wendy Holcamp. I'm a freelance journalist. I had two questions. One is, you said, Mama, that we can't do it. We can't bound sharks globally. But I wanted to know what you thought why we can't, because we've been able to achieve a global ban on whales. So the other question is, has there been any pushback from fisheries that claim, that if you protect sharks and you create the shark free marinas, the sharks are going to eat all my fish? Because I know you've seen sea lions and other species. I just never heard that, so I'm just curious.
Well, I'll take your second question first, and yes, there's tremendous pushback from the commercial fisheries, because there's a huge economic incentive there, but also from recreational fishermen, because they, every time they try and catch a snapper or a grouper or a tuna, very often it's taken out by a shark that might be there, and so yes, they're completely opposed to having more sharks around. As far as a global ban, I'm not sure it's quite as analogous to marine mammals, because shark fisheries have existed. The consumption of a shark, especially shark fin, goes back to over 1,000 years. It's a cultural tradition, and the consumption of marine mammals doesn't quite fall into that particular group. Marine mammals, I think, also there's a lot more political support on the part of humans, just because they're cute and cuddly, and I think that level of attention to sharks by humans it's just not practical to get that. And then also, we have to think about the fact that sharks are, can provide a good source of protein for a good part of the world that doesn't have very much. I mean, it's all very well for us in the West to sit here and say, oh, you terrible people out there in the rest of the world, you're killing all the lovely sharks. But at the same time, then, we all have our own shark fisheries that supplies the world. However, I'm not trying to say that it's a bad thing to try and protect sharks. All I'm saying is that politically, it will not be practical to ban all shark fishing. And sharks can or should be managed very carefully as a resource. There's no reason to take them out of the market completely.
Next, and by the way, not that I think any of you are shy, but jump in for pushback with each other. And if you have, I know some of you, go ahead, Matt.
So I completely agree with Mahmoud. The one thing that I'll point to is that the United States has one of the most sophisticated management systems for fish than probably anywhere else in the world, and sophisticated laws. And we have lots of overfishing of fish species, and I know that was topic here, and lots of species that are fully depleted. And these are, many of these species have a much higher ability to be sustainably caught. So while I agree with Mahmoud, I just don't think that it's a good idea to go down that path, because I don't think we have tight enough control over how we manage and catch our fish.
Go down which path?
A sustainable fishing path. I don't see it as a viable option.
So your choice on sharks would be that you believe we need?
I think, I mean, in most locations, we need to stop catching sharks.
Period.
Yeah, period. If there is a possibility of a managed, sustainably caught fishery, we're not opposed to that. But I just have not seen that demonstrated, and I've seen too much overfishing of many other species that are much less biologically vulnerable. And this is just, in the United States alone, which again has some of the best management, then you look at the rest of the world, and I just don't see how it's viable to have sustainably caught shark species.
And yet Mahmoud says politely, and no Jerry Springer here, don't throw chairs, but there's some polite disagreement that don't know if we can get from here to there right now. And that's the gap, is that correct? Am I reading that right, gentlemen?
Yeah, I my contention again is, I mean, Matt is completely right in the sense that there are no concrete examples where there's been a shark fishery and that's been managed, quote unquote managed, and that shark fishery has come back. Although, you know, we ostensibly have shark fishery management here, but that's not to say that it can't be better managed. But now here's the key: is that better management does require better information, and some might argue, oh, you've got tons of data, there's just no sharks left, you've got to stop fishing all the sharks. But you know, there are international treaties meant to try and conserve or manage sharks properly. CITES is probably the most effective one out there because most countries do take CITES pretty seriously. Problem is that when you get to a CITES meeting, the countries opposing measures to list sharks just always use the argument that there is insufficient scientific data to support listing of those sharks.
Let's move to our next essay. Raise your hands again for me. We're moving down the line. We're just going to go this way. Name and title, please.
I'm Katie Alford. I'm a freelance writer, and I have a question having made. I'm interested in the shark free marina designation. I wonder if you could hold up the sign again, and also while you do that, if you could comment on, do you get 100% compliance?
Absolutely not. Okay. Shark-free marina is pretty simple. A marina who decides to put this on their dock is becoming part of a voluntary program to monitor their own people, their own clientele, to ensure that they don't bring sharks back to the dock. This is a public information service. It goes on. We've been adopted by quite a number of marinas which have heavy fishing influence, which is fantastic. But we've also been adopted by many, many marinas who are, you know, private or semi-commercial or even diver-centric, people who don't even necessarily have fishermen. And I welcome them because even though that marina might not be a specific place for shark fishermen, it's visited by many, many people who have access to the ocean. So I see this as like a no-smoking sign. We see it on the walls everywhere and we go, yeah, no duh, it kills us. We don't smoke. Okay, go outside if you have to. This is public information saying have a better attitude towards sharks. The other category which is important is the shark-friendly marina, which is the sign I showed you before. That has been adopted by probably about 30% of the marinas in Florida who've recently signed up. That simply says we don't encourage the taking of sharks at this marina. We can't stop you because they're municipalities and they're not allowed to, but they certainly discourage it, which I think is a big win to have in public eye.